KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde. When Carver Clark Gayton was growing up in Seattle in the 1940s, he didn't hear anything about African American history in school, but his mother told him stories, including one about his great grandfather, Lewis George Clark. Clark was an escaped slave and an abolitionist, and his personal story found its way into the anti-slavery novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, which went on to become the second most popular book in the 19th century. Only the Bible sold more copies, and Uncle Tom's Cabin is widely seen by historians as one of the factors leading to the Civil War. Carver Clark Gayton joins us now to talk about his great-grandfather and his own story. Carver Clark Gayton, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, David. Pleasure to be here.
Mr. Gayton lives in Seattle. He went to Garfield and in 1960 started teaching history there in 1961. He's also worked as an FBI agent at the University of Washington and at Boeing. He also has a PhD in political science, and he was the first director of the Northwest African American Museum. So again, thanks so much for joining us. And I want to start out, you know, just with this question that you start out in the introduction to your great-grandfather's book, which is just how much were you learning about African-American history here in Seattle as a kid?
Well, certainly as a child, when I became, you know, school age, there wasn't much at all that was taught in the schools. But I was real fortunate, being at home. And when I was a young child, my mother, she would talk about, different important figures as related to African American history when we were kids, and she had some books in the home. There was a little library, and she would pull some of those books out and relate, some of the stories, some of these famous folks, like some of the traditional ones that I think most folks know about, those like George Washington Carver, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, and so on, but many, many more that I think the general population really doesn't know that much about, unfortunately.
And how did those stories affect you as a kid growing up, hearing about those stories?
Well, I just thought it was, I was very interesting. I was certainly intrigued with the information that my mother had about my great-grandfather. But, one of the things as an African-American growing up in Seattle back in those days, the fact that it wasn't mentioned, nothing much was mentioned about these heroes, African-American heroes, in the schools. So it made you stop and think, well, what is the reality, or what is the importance really of what my mother and father were talking about? We thought this was, very interesting information, but we never did question probably as much as we should have. Why there wasn't much discussed about these wonderful heroes as a part of American history.
Seattleite Carver Clark Gayton is with us, and he's telling us about his great-grandfather, Lewis Clark, who was the basis for the character George in Harriet Beecher Stowe's anti-slavery novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Other than your mom, how much were these stories told by other leaders in the African-American community?
I really didn't hear that much in the African American community either. I mean, sometimes we would go to the YMCA or the YWCA in the central area of Seattle, and we would have some individuals within the community that would talk about their lives and so on. And one of the interesting things was that back in those early days, I used to go to the Women's Y that was up on 22nd and Madison, and that was called the Phyllis Wheatley YWCA. And my mother would talk about Phyllis Wheatley, who was a famous poet who met George Washington back in the 18th century and was regarded as one of the renowned African-American poets. So I knew of some of those things, but there really wasn't a broad-based variety of information that came from, either the schools or from the African-American community, quite frankly.
All right, and I want to get to your great-grandfather's book, which was originally written in 1845. It's just been reissued by the University of Washington Press, and you've written a new introduction to the book. And I'm wondering why it was so important to you to get involved with this project now.
Well, it's been a kind of a progression over the years because, as I made reference to when I was very young, my mother would talk about Clark, and mentioned that, that this was her grandfather and so on. In fact, she would pull out a book from the small library that she had. It was called The Key to Uncle Tom's Cabin. And in that book, you know, she would relate that, you know, George Harris in that book was a famous you know, character within Uncle Tom's Cabin, was, you know, based on the life of her grandfather, which was Lewis Clark. And, you know, we thought this was some, you know, fascinating information, but we really didn't think it was anything other than a family lore. And we didn't realize that this man really was much more famous than any of us realize. And my research really didn't reveal that until probably the last 25, 30 years. But when I was a child, I didn't really regard him as that important figure in history, in American history, certainly.
And let's talk about your grandfather in just a second. I had one more question. You mentioned the character George Harris in the novel. Remind us who he was.
Well, George Harris was the rebellious, I think Harriet Beecher Stowe called him the quadroon. In other words, you know, one quarter, you know, black blood. And that he was the son of a Scotsman. I think that was related in the book, too. But, you know, he was a contrast to the main character, Uncle Tom, in that he was, you know, always challenging the establishment, you know, so to speak. And he didn't relish, you know, at all, you know, being under, you know, a slave master and all that sort of business. So he made up his mind as a young man that he was going to take off and, you know, leave the plantation and escape to Canada. And that's exactly what my grandfather had done.
Where was he born?
He was born in Kentucky, and right outside Lexington, Kentucky. It was Madison County. And he was the son of a quadroon mother who was also the daughter of the plantation owner out of wedlock. And she married a Scotsman who was a weaver on that plantation. And it was a marriage. He sought her out, the plantation owner. The father of my great-great-grandmother, he didn't want that marriage to take place at all. But the Scotsman, he pursued her and said that he wanted to marry her, with the understanding, you know, from the slave master that that she was going to be freed, as and the subsequent, you know, children that were born in that relationship were going to be freed after he died. That did not happen. So that gives you a little of both individuals. My great-grandfather's father was a Scotsman, as was Lewis Clark's grandfather.
How unusual was that at the time?
Well, I think in the black community, it's known that, you know, it's pretty common. I think it's known. One of the interesting and, you know, somewhat surprising things is that the broader community, you know, are surprised that that kind of intermingling of the bloods was taking place. But it was more common than not. You know, it wasn't that unusual. I think the unusual thing is that, you know, I've been able to trace the ancestry back into those early days and be able to come up with all this information about it. It isn't done as often as you know, within the black community as you know, I think would be nice. But I don't think that effort or that wherewithal is there to do the kind of in-depth research that I've been able to do, and I think that's relatively unique. But the general theme, the general story of that interrelationship, that mingling of the blood, was something that was common at the plantations, you know, throughout the country.
Carver Clark Gayton is with us and telling us about his great grandfather Lewis Clark, who was the basis for the character George Harris in Harriet Beecher Stowe's anti-slavery novel Uncle Tom's Cabin. Seems like kind of a mouthful,
right?
So he was separated from his family at the age of seven. What transpired in his life after that?
Well, he really didn't have that much connection with his mother. Only in those early years, until and after he was 7 years old, this is when the slave master had died, and the assumption again was that the children were going to be freed. But he had to go to a daughter of the slave master, and there was a dissension in the family. You know, the white members of the family, obviously, about this whole thing. And so he went with a woman by the name of Betsy Blanton, who was, you know, a terrible terrible woman, and continually, beat Lewis Clark and the other mixed, blood, children that were on the plantation because of this aggravation, I guess, that she had within herself, that her father had had these other kinds of relationships with the slaves. So he had a terrible time over a period of about 8 years in that Blanton plantation, and he had two other slave masters afterwards before he escaped.
And how did he ultimately make the decision to escape, and how did he pull it off?
Well, after being with the Blanton family, he was sold to another family, followed by the name of Kennedy. He was a general in the Revolutionary War. And he was a lot better, considering it's still slavery. But he wasn't beaten as often as he was with the Blanton family. And then he died, and then he went to another family, and they were much more rational and gentle with him. And so he had a much better relationship, and he learned from his father how to weave. He became an expert weaver, and he was parceled out, to the community, and he had a pass to, take what he was able to produce, on his spinning wheel and so on. And so he did pretty well, but he had to give the money back to the slave master and so on. So he had a pretty good life, but he resented obviously being a slave. But as slavery goes, that was a lot better condition than he had with the first master. And then word got out that he was going to be sold to a plantation in Louisiana. And Louisiana was known as probably one of the worst states in the country when it came to how they treated the slaves. And so hearing that he was going to be, this is when he was about 30 years old, he decided that he was going to leave and made arrangements, to take off because of this pending sale of him, to go to New Orleans. But it didn't, he found out after he left that it wasn't, they weren't able to consummate the sale. But anyway, he was obviously pleased that he took off in the first place.
Seattleite Carver Clark Gayton is with us, and he's telling us about his great-grandfather, Lewis Clark, who was the basis for a character in the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin. So then he ends up escaping, and sort of fast forwarding for a minute, how does he end up becoming an abolitionist lecturer in the North?
Well, it's interesting. He took off. He ultimately went up to Canada the year before he got up into Canada. This is about 1841 or so. He found out that his brother was not up there, and he heard it was a small community up in Canada, and he was told that Canada was going to be a lot worse. The slave master said that the Canadians were worse, on blacks than whites were in the South. But he found out that, he saw black soldiers and all this. So he was relatively, surprised. And certainly those horror stories were not true. But he found out that his brother was not there, and he decided to come back, to the United States. And he went to Oberlin. And he reconnected. He found out that his brother had gone to Oberlin after finding out he was not in Canada. And so he had decided to go back and get one of his brothers. His name was Cyrus, a younger brother. And so the intrigue that went on and him having to sneak back across the border of Ohio, to Lexington, Kentucky to get his brother was a fascinating story in itself. And so I think the word got around. There was a strong abolitionist community in Oberlin, Ohio, right across the border from Kentucky. And so the word started getting around about what he was doing with regard to escaping and particularly in the abolitionist community and bringing his younger brother out. And then there's an interesting event that got national publicity is when his brother in Oberlin, they were supposed to get together to make a decision whether or not they're going to stay in Oberlin or leave. And there were some slave catchers who, came from Kentucky to catch both Lewis Clark and his brother Milton, and they knew that they were in Oberlin. So they came up there. And
this is with the Fugitive Slave Act.
The Fugitive Slave
Act, or before that?
This is before the Fugitive Slave Act. This is 1842. The Fugitive Slave Act came in 1850. Okay. And so, so you had these slave catchers who would capture Milton. They missed catching Lewis Clark, his brother. And the slave catchers captured him. They were going to take him to court. And the community rose up. These are all whites who rose up and said that, they knew of the two brothers. And they said, you are not taking these folks, back to Kentucky. And so they forced these slave catchers to, unchain Milton. And they basically rode them out of town. They had to go back, go back to Kentucky without, getting their prey, so to speak. And the word got out about that, and then Lewis, came back. He had gone into Kentucky to get his younger brother, so he, was not there when all that took place with regard to his brother Milton. And so there was a story many stories that were written in the newspapers about this event. And the uprising of the white community on behalf of these two slaves. In fact, there was one article that was written by someone using the pseudonym Franklin that was in one of the abolitionist newspapers. Found out that Franklin was actually Harriet Beecher Stowe, who ultimately became the great writer. But this was 10 years before she wrote her book. And I don't think even Lewis knew. This came from my research that she used that pseudonym, for many articles that she wrote. And that article got out, throughout the country. And the abolitionist leaders, not only in Oberlin and Ohio, but abolitionist leaders on the West Coast, where the abolitionist movement started, where it was born, they wanted, the two of them to come back east to talk to abolitionist gatherings in the East Coast. And we're talking about in Massachusetts, in New York, in up in Maine, and ultimately up in Canada, and so on and so forth. So they were they became popular figures as it related to the abolitionist movement. And they were Lewis, in particular, was a very colorful speaker. He had not been educated in the South, but he was staying at a home where he was taught how to read and so on and so forth. But what happened was the word got out about their activities, them going into the South to bring on other slaves, the near capture of them in Oberlin and so on, and so that was good grist, for the abolitionist mill to get the word out about what these interesting individuals were doing in relation to escaping slavery.
All right, Carver Clark Gayton, thanks so much for telling us, giving us the introduction, at least, to the story about your great-grandfather.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
His great-grandfather's book has just been reissued by the University of Washington Press, and it's got a very long title, On the Narrative of the Sufferings of Lewis Clark During a Captivity of More Than 25 Years Among the Algerines of Kentucky, One of the So-Called Christian States of North America. And Carver Clark Gayton has a good explanation about that title in the book. Today's program was produced by Leslie McClurg and Molly Williams. Andy Hurst is your engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.